Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the New Mainstream podcast, where we explore the impact of multicultural consumers on marketing and media. I'm your host, Mario Carrasco, and co-founder of Think Now.
Excited to introduce our guest today, Sue Schmidelkoffer, Global Director of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion at UPS. Welcome, Sue.
Thank you so much for having me, Mario. Happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you. Before we jump in and learn more about your role, UPS, would love to learn a little bit more about your journey. How did you end up at UPS and in your current position?
Oh, certainly. Love to share that. I started with UPS actually in Wisconsin, so you'll hear the Midwest accent come out. And in July of this year, it'll be 29 years already. So I like to say now that it's 29 years that I started, I guess, the day I was born, right? But I graduated from college in Wisconsin and had the opportunity to start at UPS in their communications area. I had a journalism degree and a Spanish minor, and UPS had a communications specialist opening, and I really thought that it would be a neat career path to kind of explore a business side versus working for a broadcasting or a newspaper or anything like that. And here I am, you know, almost three decades later. What happened was I was able to rotate through a lot of the different departments within HR. I had not set out to have a path as an HR professional, but had a boss that kind of took me under his wing and said, other than communications, let's have you start learning different things. That led to our first family relocation for my husband and my kids to Michigan, led me to Chicago on a commuting almost a year there, and then brought me to Atlanta in 2010, where I've been at our global headquarters ever since. So I've had a lot of different opportunities within the space of still being with the same company, but just most of it within HR and the past several years in DEI.
That's incredible. UPS is one of those iconic companies. So it was really exciting to have you on. And so now you're Global Director of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. One of the questions I always ask people, we have, you know, people from Meta, from different tech and automotive, and DE&I is defined a little bit differently in every organization. So would love to hear how UPS defines or thinks about DE&I.
You know, it's interesting for us because we have been around so long that, it sounds kind of trite, but DEI and our DNA, right? Our company values, and when you look back to our founder and our rich history, back in the 1960s, UPS was involved in diversity efforts. They just weren't the workforce DEI components that we have today, but they really started with, as UPS expanded across the U.S. before it became a global organization, that there were people in the communities that needed help. We needed workers, right? So our founder just partnered up with a lot of diverse organizations, such as the National Urban League and a lot of different organizations and welfare to work programs, and just, again, community-based organizations that were really working with finding jobs locally in our communities. And that's how it started, is really those partnerships with those organizations. And we've maintained those through our UPS Foundation, which has celebrated over 70 years of being in existence. So it's not new to UPS, but it's just one of those cultural things, and that core value that the company has had is just that it's been about people, and people of all different backgrounds, and really helping them collectively help serve our customers. Because at UPS, you know, we don't have a product, right? We're carrying what everybody else has that's meaningful to them. So providing service and using our community members was key to that.
And tell us more a little about the UPS Foundation. I mean, it sounds like it's interesting. It's in your DNA, and partnering with organizations, that's something that companies are just starting to realize as a critical component of DE&I, right? Like partnering with those organizations that already have inroads with communities. So we'd love to learn more about the UPS Foundation.
Yeah. So with the foundation, there's so many different components of it. And I think that probably a lot of people don't know everything we do, right? But really, we're looking at 25% of our charitable donations from the UPS Foundation. Our goal is to target them towards underserved women, youth, and marginalized communities. So that's really, really exciting for us. We are trying to get to a goal of 30 million volunteer hours focused on underserved communities by 2030. We are just partnering with so many different organizations across the globe, even the humanitarian relief, right, with the earthquakes and hurricanes and everything else, especially with the need in Turkey, the need in our own backyard, when you have a train derailment and things like that. UPS partners with external organizations to provide need where our communities need it, and we can get there quickly, being a logistics provider as well. So, I mean, that doesn't even touch the surface of everything that we're engaged with, but community has been a core value for UPS. So we're encouraged in our day and on work time, outside of work time, to give back to the communities. And we've even gone to a model of employees' contributions to those organizations they support, that UPS will help match a lot of that. So the foundation is just doing such great work and touches so many lives across our globe.
And what's great to hear too is, you know, something I hear speaking to other professionals as well, is like, it's part of your DNA, one, because it's the right thing to do, but two, it's helping you as an organization, right? I mean, the more you support those communities, the stronger UPS grows. I mean, is that how you all see that? It's good to do, but it's also good for business.
It is good business. You're right, Mario, because one of the things that you just made me think of is our Women's Exporters Program. So if we help women thrive in our global communities and give them partnerships, help them be successful, because we know women entrepreneurs are growing at such a great rate, that once their business takes off and we've helped them from the ground up, they're going to continue to use our services, right? And so that for us has been a great program that we've put in place, I think, about 5 years ago, and has just expanded. You know, it started internationally and really has really grown even domestically as well, too, just providing access to people, access to money, to loans, to knowledge, to people that can help them be successful. And yeah, we're really proud of just that one program alone and the impact that we're having on women across the globe.
Tell us more about that. That's the first I hear, the Women's Exporter Program. Like, did that fall under your purview as heading up DE&I, or is this something that existed already?
No, it started through the foundation. I'm familiar with it, but I don't run that. We have some great leaders. I think it was 2018. And what they've been doing since that time is training female and small business owners and connecting them to the global economy. So really just, again, giving people a pathway to success. And I believe they've trained over 100,000 women and small business owners since their inception in 2018. And doing that through partnerships, right? We're not doing that Women Exporters Program without partnering with external organizations and people who are, you know, in the countries that need the most help, that can help us get that access. So that's really important, I think, with any efforts that organizations and foundations are doing. It's really having those local connections and then fostering those partnerships, and just the sky's the limit from there. So we're really excited about that.
That's incredible. Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's a passion point of mine as well, just supporting entrepreneurship. It's great at changing the individual entrepreneurs' lives, but also the communities they serve. So really great that you all are doing that. And I want to talk a little bit about your role specifically. So it sounds like you've been in this D&I role for about 8 years now. And obviously, it's been a core part of UPS's DNA, and you can just tell. A lot of companies have, it's come up on their radar, you know, since the events of 2020. Like, the events of 2020 shifted how UPS thinks about DE&I, and you were in that role at that time? Or I guess the question is, what effect has that had, if any, in terms of how UPS is approaching DE&I and your role specifically?
I think we were positioned pretty well, you know, for that, because it wasn't like, oh no, we don't have anything in place. And how do we respond? And how do we help our people? How do we help our communities? So I think there was a lot of benefit to those programs and it just being part of our fabric of our company and a part of our business strategy. So it's really the unique though, that at that time, our CEO was just coming to her tenure, just starting her role at UPS. That's Carol Tomei, who is our first woman CEO, and we were really excited to have her. But can imagine starting in a pandemic in 2020, a company like ours, and then, you know, everything that was happening in our society at that time. But she just jumped in. She knew UPS. She was on our board for over 17 years and just said, Let's pause. Let's reflect on what's happening. Let's talk to our people. And she put out that statement. There is no room for hate. She, you know, put out a video message, put out messaging to our people, to our global community, saying, not here, not within my UPS, and not within our communities. And she supported what we stood up as what we call an equity, justice, and action task force for UPS. And myself and several other leaders with the organization got together and said, how do we rally around our people and our communities right now? What are we doing already, right? Because it wasn't about starting things. What are we already doing? Can we amplify them? What aren't we doing that we might need to go faster than we would in normal circumstances? So that really helped inform us and look at it not only from the employee side, but the customer side, the community, the supplier diversity, the diverse marketing segment, and from our public affairs and what we're doing with healthcare and the judicial system. All those things all came together and we came up with some core list of things that we thought, let's try to tackle these. Let's figure out where we can put our time, our resources, our financial commitments even further than we have. So we're really proud of that, just coming together from a grassroots effort and just the company saying, okay, we can help influence this more and do more. And we've been able to do that. And so I think it wasn't, again, about just, oh, what can we start to do, but how do we have a greater good and impact on the things we're doing? And are we missing anything right now as a result of the events that were going on?
And can you tell me, you know, share with me some wins of like some goals that you had last year that you met and maybe what you hope to accomplish this year in 2023?
You know, we've done so much from so many different avenues. So I can kind of give you a couple different perspectives. Just looking at it from that diverse customer segment, some of those wins are really just being more focused on the health and growth of women-owned and minority-owned small and medium businesses. So that's a huge opportunity for UPS. Those, are growing businesses, need a little bit of support. So UPS launched what's called UPS Ignite. It was a $1.25 million investment from UPS and the UPS Foundation, which we talked about. It provided access to education, resources, networks, and just capital. Sponsoring different professionals and community organizations, providing grants, those type of things, really to help those businesses ignite. And that's the name of the program, giving them opportunities to be successful. So that was really exciting. And from a customer and a marketing standpoint, we've also done so much within the supplier diversity space with our procurement team and really taking a look at what is that spend with the diverse owned businesses. So, by the end of 2022, our supplier diversity procurement team spent over $1.2 billion with diverse owned businesses, exceeding their 2023 goal a full year ahead. So wow. That's a big win, right? They added 55 new diverse suppliers and we used a total of almost 1,400 diverse suppliers for procurement. In addition, that was diverse owned businesses, but you look at small and diverse owned businesses as a separate category, and they spent over $4 billion there again, exceeding that goal a year earlier. So those are the types of things that we're doing, not only again to help our employees that already work for us, but really know that when you're a company of our size, right, we're over 200 countries and territories, over 534,000 people across the globe. That's a big impact for one company. And so we recognize the significance of that. And so we are really having some great measurement and results. And I know there's always more to be done.
That's incredible. And that makes me think about your position, like how, you know, you have, there's so many facets of D&I that you just touched on, right? You have the procurement side of things, you have the employee side of things, you have, you know, the marketing side of things. Like, tell us more a little bit about how you sit in relation to all these departments. Are you talking to the C-suite? Are you talking to the heads of these departments? Would love to learn more kind of in the weeds about that.
Sure. So my role rolls up under HR. And so I support our chief human resources officer, who also has the role of chief diversity, equity, inclusion officer. So that puts me in a position, at least to be able to have influence among not only our HR teams, but really from those other groups, like you mentioned. So we look at it as a stakeholder approach, right? So that we, from the employee side and that HR and DEI ownership, from the customer side, again, working with the our diverse customer segment and our marketing team, and from the supplier side, yeah, the whole procurement group and the community side with the UPS Foundation. So there's so much overlap to that. So a lot of the work that we do and try to influence and build upon is just working collaboratively among those spaces. And then really also a key component is our communications group, right? Mm-hmm. Is that ESG, the comms, the internal comms, the external comms, the social. Because you have to tell your story about it too, and you really have to really help people understand your brand, because most of the time, and we're really proud of it, our brand is our drivers on the street delivering what matters every day across the globe. But there is so much more to UPS. So we think we need to do more to be able to tell our story, tell about the great work we're doing, so people really have an understanding and can feel comfortable, whether they want to come work for us, whether they want to be a vendor, a supplier, or they just are in a community that might need a little extra help or might need some volunteer hours for their organization from UPSers. So that's the approach we take, is really just collaborating across all key stakeholders within our company and the external partners that we work with.
I love that. And UPS is, to me, is one of those rare companies, like, I don't, like, rarely do you hear negative things about, right? Like, we all have positive. Kind of, I know personally, some of my best friends, I'm an avid mountain biker. And so, I don't know, for whatever reason in my neighborhood, a lot of UPS people that have retired are mountain bikers, but just I'll always talk fondly about their time at UPS. But you're still pushing to do more, which is great. And I think organizations can learn from that, right? Like, there's always work to be done, regardless of how good you might be perceived in the marketplace from a D&I perspective. So I respect that.
Thank you. Yeah, it's our culture, right? Whether people, how long they've worked for us, who we've touched, there's a lot of pride. And we're a company we feel of real high integrity, hardworking, and again, want to do more continuous improvement. And, you know, really, you know, our purpose statement is, I think, is kind of what we use as our North Star, right? Is moving our world forward by delivering what matters. And whether you're that loader unloader in a building every day that you don't see on the street, whether you're that driver out there, whether you're our tractor trailer driver overnight, or someone delivering and working on our healthcare products and delivering life-saving devices and equipment, or someone responding in a crisis through the foundation, there's a place for everybody. And I think we put categorize that all as you belong at UPS, right? That sense of belonging, that no matter what you are, if you're within the company or using our services or talking to your neighbor who's worked for us, that you feel that sense of belonging, that it is about people. And I think that that's the message that we are trying to even hone in on more in 2023 and beyond, that sense of belonging and inclusion.
This is a little bit of a tangent, but it made me think about, like, there's a report out, for example, talking about blue collar work, like specifically contractors, that we need 500,000 contractors in the next 5 to 10 years, and we're nowhere to meeting our goal. From a UPS perspective, right, like, is there a similar demand? I can imagine that, given, I mean, of course, during the pandemic, everybody was online shopping, but like, is that one of your goals, is to get more people to work and consider UPS as a career?
Yeah, I think that for us, we definitely are aware of the labor shortages, you know, across the globe. But for UPS, I think what we've done is focus on, we just recently launched a UPS jobs and opportunity report to really share about what types of jobs that we have, what type of benefits we offer, what type of advancement, because that's really important for people to understand. We are looking for people who can aspire to be anything throughout the organization. The sky's the limit at UPS. You can start as a loader unloader, and our prior CEO did exactly that, was a part-timer. You know, our current head of sales and international, she started as a marketing intern and made it to the C-suite. All of those type of examples are ways that we're showing UPS has great benefits. It's a great employer, and people are proud to work here. Certainly no organization, you know, has it all figured out, but we certainly try to make sure that, you know, it's people first, that we're people-led and innovation-driven and customer-focused. You know, those, if you center your core values around that and make people know, I think that it doesn't become as much of that war for talent, because people want to come to you and want to work for you. And if they're having a good experience, they're likely to tell their friends and family to come to work at UPS. And that is one of our measures that we take a look at too, is saying, you know, what is that likelihood to recommend? And that way we get a little bit of a pulse on what the UPS culture and sentiment is like.
That's so true, right? Like it's less about focusing outward and more take care of your people. Promote your people, and you're just gonna that's the best way to attract talent.
Absolutely.
And to that point, so I'm curious, does UPS have like employee resource groups, like ERGs around, I don't know, women, Latino, Black? I mean, and how does that play into your DE&I work?
You know, in DEI, you say there's biases, so we all have biases. So I'm biased, and I would say that our BRGs are second to none. We have just such a great program. I think it's our biggest example of inclusion that we have across the organization. And I think that there's always a fallacy that resource groups are somehow exclusive. I think that comes from people not really understanding, you know, and really engaging themselves, because once they do, they're like, wow, this is amazing. They really have been a skill development, and they were a retention type group for us. So when we started our resource groups, our first one was back as a pilot program in 2006 through Women's Leadership Development, because we were finding that women were leaving the company at higher rates than men. So it becomes, what are we going to do about it? So pilot, what we called WLD. Well, that program was so successful, and that pilot launched, and everybody wanted to get chapters going. So it expanded across the globe then. And then back in 2012, it led us to 10 additional core types. So yeah, absolutely. We have groups across African-American, Asian, focus on abilities, which is our disability inclusion, future leaders, which we renamed from our millennial group. We have a Hispanic Latino group called Corsair, multicultural, parents and caregivers, Pride Alliance, veterans, women in operations, and then WLD. So 11 different types, but over 200 chapters across the globe. I mean, that in over 36 countries. So that's really phenomenal. And they're supported by our most senior leaders at the organization that we have lined up as executive advisors and executive sponsors to help them be successful. So they can still do a lot of that grassroots type thing, but they have the BRGs fall under my team to help them be successful and just provide them with that support that they need to help grow the business, grow themselves, and help grow our communities.
I love that. And is it like modeled after that first one you had in terms of women, like developing leadership and ways for them to grow within careers, or like what type of support are you all providing?
Absolutely. That is really, we haven't gone too far away from that core model of UPS connections, business connections, and community connections. That was our approach. What we've done a lot and gotten a lot better at is trying to coordinate the groups on a global scale, right? And not have to recreate the wheel. We know that business resource group members are doing their day job on top of their passion and commitment for the space. So we want to make it easier, have them work smarter. So we do a lot. We've try to make everything much more digital than we've had before, share best practices and resources, use the world that we're in on Zoom and Teams and every other video platform has really helped us be able to connect people across the globe in different ways than we ever had in years past. So again, a lot of those program opportunities are among what's happening. Is it Black History Month? Is it coming up on Women's History Month? Is it, those type of cultural and different celebrations, the network opportunities and professional opportunities to take advantage of career development programs when we want to focus on some of those neighbor-to-neighbor community hours that we are doing towards whatever community that we're looking at increasing our hours. We use our BRGs to help rally around that. So there's so many different components to it. And for us, it's been a great source of really taking a look at and getting exposure to those BRG leaders as chairs and co-chairs of those groups, because then they're seen outside of their normal job. So someone you might not have even known, you might be like, who's that person? I want them on my team. So that exposure opportunity for those leaders to be able to do something different and get that experience and put that on their career development profile in our system is really, really beneficial.
I love that. It sounds like you have a wealth of knowledge, and I feel like UPS is one of those organizations doing DE&I right. I have people that come onto the podcast that are managing essentially two jobs, like head of marketing and head of DE&I. What advice would you give to someone that's listening, that's interested in DE&I, maybe wants to start it at their organization, or they're head of DE&I for a large organization like a UPS, but want to bring something new? Like what can we learn from UPS to bring to their organizations from a DE&I perspective?
Well, this is such a great space because there's no competitive advantage, right? Like I can share everything with you. I can share it with a competitor. Whoever wants the information, whether they're a company of five or an individual or a company of 500,000, we always provide that. We've got some things we're doing well, but we also then in return go, well, this is what we're struggling with. How can you help us? What ideas? So it's always about that exchanging ideas. And I think that it can be very overwhelming in the space. You just have to have some patience through it. You have to have a lot of grit and determination and always have hope and be optimistic, but don't try to tackle everything at once, right? So we need to train and we need to focus on metrics. So we need to have resource groups. We need to do that. No, what are three things maybe that you could do in 2023 to measure and build off of? And, anyone else's journey can't be what our journey was. It's going to be what theirs is. So what can they incorporate from some of those best practices that we've done and that other companies have done and say, oh, they're all saying they did this in that first year. Okay, let's try that. Let's start with that. You start to hear some of those resonating themes about whether it's training and education, whether it's just communication or just listening before you start doing anything. So I think it's really about doing all that, building a roadmap long range, but then saying, again, what are some of those quick hits that we can go to and say, where do we want to be? And what's our baseline right now? And that way you just don't feel like you're biting off more than you can chew, because there's not always a lot of people in the space and there's not always a lot of budget. And you don't necessarily need all that. You need to just have your leaders committed organizationally, like we talked about, that top of house from the different stakeholders. And when you have that, you're going to be much more successful than just trying to do it ad hoc.
I love that advice. I mean, and I think that's something that I hear recurring is in the DE&I space, that it can be overwhelming. And so to your point, like just pick two or three things to focus on, because if you try to tackle it in all, it's very difficult and many people give up. And that's actually something I wanted to ask you about. I mean, I don't know if you've been seeing this kind of in the news, but like this idea of diversity fatigue, mm-hmm. companies, especially as we're coming into a recession, and just hearing a lot about DE&I, some people maybe that are not in this role are kind of throwing their hands up. I don't know. Are you feeling that diversity fatigue? What are your thoughts on this idea?
Wow. I think I've pushed through any type of fatigue I've had because I've been in for so long, and 8 years is a long time in the space, but it's not, because I feel like it's flown by, and I love it that you're whatever role you have with any organization or in life, you're never going to have everything going your way every day, right? Those good days outweigh the bad, or the small intervention you had, or someone just reaching out and saying, thanks for doing that podcast, or could I get a best practice from you? Or, wow, this really helped. Something you said resonated. For me, that's all it can take in a lot of days to feel like, okay, what I'm doing is worth it, right? Those big measurements are so hard to move over time, especially with large organizations. So if I just get hung up on that, then that fatigue is real sometimes, right? But yeah. I feel like we've had some really big wins. So we've made some really good strides in some of our aspirational goals. There's always work to be done. So I think that we're feeling fatigue as a world with our schedules and all of that sometimes, and prioritizing ourselves sometimes is lost. And so I always tell people, you've got to take care of yourself first, your mental health, take advantage. You've got benefits. There's people there. If you can do that, then you can push through some of those tough days that you have. So for me, it's celebrating the small victories. And of course, there's no way I would not be in the role and not be, you know, have a little bit of like, okay, I still haven't gotten there with this. Why? Or what do I need to do different? But I think going into 2023, it's a new year, and that's always exciting too, because, right, you just can say, look what I all did. Wow, that's amazing. And look what I'm going to build on even more so this year based on those results. And so I'm trying to tie a lot of what we're looking at organizationally from a better and bolder approach with our strategic initiatives that our C-suite's focusing on, and say, how do we translate that with our DEI goals? We're going to be better and bolder. We're going to show more data. We're going to be more transparent. We're going to be better at telling our story. We have a great story. Why aren't we telling it? Why aren't we proud? And so that for me, takes away the tiredness of feeling like I'm not sure that we're moving it enough of the needle.
I love that. And that's a great transition before we end. What are you most excited about at 2023? You've had some amazing wins in 2022. What are you looking to build on?
I think really capitalizing on, like I said, being better and bolder. We have this leadership model in HR that has rolled out recently called Head, Heart, and Hands. And it's incorporated so much of the DEI space into that. And so for me, that's really exciting in 2023, so that you have a model for our leaders to model inclusivity, right? That some of those skills and the leader who is going to be an emerging leader in the face of our senior leadership positions in the future needs to have those components. And so I think, you know, that accountability piece with a model that just talks about how to use your head, how to use your heart, and how to use your hands to incorporate being a leader at UPS. So that's really exciting for me. I feel like there's a lot more momentum in this year with people feeling really kind of getting that connectivity of like, oh, this, once it's woven into processes, it doesn't feel so much like this is DEI or you have to stamp it. When it is that core value, then you get really excited about it, and you can see people taking it on, and, you know, you're trying to go, great, they've got it, let's go. And then it'll free me up to, you know, have a longer range vision and say, what's next for possibilities, and how can we just help, you know, that sense of belonging. So that's really what I'm excited about.
I love that. And I feel like we should all strive to reach that point where it doesn't feel like you're pushing D&I, that it's just part of it. I mean, I think that's the first time I hear it on the podcast. So congrats on reaching that, and wish you more success in 2023.
Thank you. It's so great to talk to you and share a story about UPS, and look forward to hearing from you more about what you're doing in the space with your podcast, and again, how we can help everybody feel a little bit more sense of belonging in the world. That's important, right?
Yeah, I appreciate that, Sue. And thank you so much for sharing best practices. If people want to reach out to you or want to learn more about diversity and inclusion at UPS, what's the best way to find you or find the work that you're involved with?
Love to connect with people on LinkedIn. I'm on there as Susan Spittelkoffer, and so happy to share my knowledge and learn from others too, right? It's always about continuing to grow and learn from others. So I don't have everything figured out, but I'm certainly able to share my perspective and experience with those out there, and look forward to doing that.
Thanks again for joining, and thanks everybody for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone listening in. To get more multicultural insights, check us out at thinknow.com and follow us on social media. You can also subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform. Final thank you to our producer, Lucas Martinez, who created our intro music and makes our podcast sound great. To email him, reach out to martinez.lucas.a@gmail.com.